Welcome to the October issue of the AES Journal podcast. I'm Kyle P. Snyder. We have a number of papers this month on spatial sound reproduction and perception, including aspects of the vertical dimension, the localization of loudspeakers, and spatial variation in cinema calibration. Rory Wallace and Hyung-Kook Lee start the running with their paper on vertical localization. They studied the effect of varying the time delay between two loudspeakers, one above the other in the median plane, finding that, in general, the localization was governed by the pitch-height effect, with high frequencies being perceived higher up than low ones. They couldn't find any evidence to support the existence of a precedence effect in the median plane, and the localization of stimuli seemed to become increasingly erratic as the time difference between the loudspeakers increased. Lee also offers an engineering report in this issue on the 2D to 3D ambience upmixing. He proposes the use of perceptual band allocation to achieve this, taking advantage of the pitch-height effect described in the paper just mentioned. Using four-channel ambient signals, recorded in a reverberant concert hall, he found that he could achieve significantly higher levels of 3D envelopment using this upmixing technique than he could using original 7- and 9-channel recordings. He also found that listeners preferred the upmixed versions to the 9-channel recordings. The influence of headphones on the localization of loudspeakers is described by Darius Seitonger and his colleagues. They explain how it's often necessary to use headphones to evaluate synthetically spatialized virtual sources, but that direct comparisons with real sources may be obstructed when wearing headphones. Their measurements showed that worn headphones did give rise to a measurable spectral error in the HRTF of signals from external loudspeakers, as much as 26 decibels for closed-back headphones. Listeners also took slightly longer and used slightly more head turns to localize external sources when wearing headphones. The authors therefore recommended care when choosing devices for use in this context. In a paper on cinema calibration, Giulio Sangarle and Tony Mateos look into the effect of microphone number and positioning when doing spatial averages of the frequency response. Spatial averages are supposed to enable the setting of a compromise response over a listening area, with the aim of matching cinema reproduction as closely as possible to dubbing stages where the content is mixed. They explain that the response converged at a rate inverse to the square root of the number of microphones used, and show the sorts of deviations found in typical rooms. Exponential swept sine signals are often used to analyze nonlinear audio systems, points out Antonin Novak and his colleagues. In examining the method more closely, they find that it's necessary to synchronize the process to do a proper analysis of higher harmonics, and they show how this can be achieved using MATLAB code. To illustrate the results, they do a comparison of woofer current distortion using sync and non-sync methods. In this month's standards news, we hear with sorrow of the untimely death of Tom Kite, who participated for many years in standards for digital audio measurements. Despite his illness, in 2012, he had accepted the chair of SC-02-01 in order to complete a major revision of the AES-17 standard on the topic, which was published in September. Sadly, though, Tom did not live to see it. Francis Rumsey reports on sound reinforcement engineering in this month's feature based on work presented at the recent conference on the topic held in Montreal. We get to hear about the evolution of large-scale loudspeaker arrays, the optimization of systems, and a novel technology for absorbing low frequencies, among other things. We get to hear a personal perspective on high-res audio from Bob Stewart in this month's Soundboard column, in which audio is compared with optics, and Stewart argues against using sampling rates and bit depths as a proxy for what is essentially an analog phenomenon. He argues that we might consider defining high-res audio in terms of the added acoustical distance from a source, which can result in attenuated high frequencies and the blurring of events in time. You can find out all about the recently elected officers for various AES governance positions in a summary presented towards the end of the October issue, and this is followed closely by a review of the Society's sustaining members. Sustaining members help to support the Society through contributions and receive recognition in the journal, at all AES technical meetings, and on our website. along with a short report by our outgoing president, Andreas Mayo, you'll find our regular news of AES sections and product developments. There are also calls for papers for two upcoming events in 2016, the Paris Convention in early June and the Sound Field Control Conference in July. Time to get your plans together for a contribution if you're thinking of attending either of those. All of this is now online at aes.org in the October issue of the AES Journal. For the Audio Engineering Society, I'm Kyle P. Snyder. Thanks for listening.